Welcome to Local Talk on KHY Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm Kay Potok, one of your hosts today, together with my co-host, Ursula Rudenberg. Hello, Ursula.
Hello, Kay, and hello to you, the listener. Welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Tomorrow, January the 28th, is the day of the new moon, and therefore the day when the Chinese New Year is celebrated. Today, we'll be bringing a new angle on this important Chinese festival.
In the second half of the show today, members of the Ames Progressive Alliance are here, and they will be giving us an update on two projects. One is the Community Solar Project and their Inclusive Ames Initiative, and also on the Women's March, and giving us follow-up on all of those. We have a local map maker in town, Nitin Gadia, and he stopped by KHOI yesterday to report on the oil spill of the week. I'm here with Nitin Gadia, Ames mapmaker, who works for MapStory.org. This website, MapStory.org, features animated maps that show change over time. One story over time that Nitin has been following is oil spills in the United States.
There's an oil spill that happens almost every day.
Nitin, tell us about the oil spill of the week.
138,600 gallons of diesel fuel spilled. Only one day after President Trump signed an executive order to revive the Dakota Access and Keystone XL pipelines. The spill was from a pipeline rupture north of here in Worth County. That's along the Minnesota border between Clear Lake and Albert Lea. The pipeline is owned by a company, Magellan Midstream Partners, an Oklahoma company. It's considered a minor spill. It basically ruined the farm that it's spilled on. There's a quote here from Jesse Coleman, researcher at Greenpeace in The Guardian. It says, "Even this spill, it can't be cleaned up. You can never really rehabilitate an area that's been soaked in gasoline." That gives you some idea of what will happen when the Dakota Access Pipeline or the Keystone XL Pipeline fails. It's irreversible.
Nitin, you're a map maker with a website called MapStory.org. You also recently made an online video showing the history of major oil spills in the United States, which was featured in the Huffington Post. Tell us a little bit about that.
The map story goes from the mid-1980s to present. It shows basically that the amount of oil spilled is enormous. It's almost as much as the amount of oil that was spilled in the BP oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico a few years ago, which was the largest oil spill ever. Pipeline spills are a significant environmental danger.
Okay. Well, thank you. Unfortunately, we'll probably have you back soon with another pipeline spill of the week.
Yep.
Thank you, Nitin.
Sure.
And this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. Nitin has promised to come back with more oil spills of the week reports. If you would like to see his video, which is essentially a map that shows the number of oil spills and where they've happened over the last 40 years or so, you can search it under Huffington Post.
And on a much more optimistic note, we're happy to welcome a special guest today, Sinian Zheng Durbin, who's been instrumental in helping to put this next section of the program together on about the Chinese New Year. Welcome, Sinian. Sinian, you've been very helpful in many ways helping to prepare this program with your expertise and with the introductions you provided to members of the Chinese community. A little later, you'll be giving us some graphic insight into the importance and scope of this festival in China itself as people move around that huge country to visit and celebrate with family members. But first, we'll be taking a look at how certain people in Ames look at this festival, specifically how young people growing up here in the Midwest feel about it. And this is where your introductions were so helpful, enabling us to meet and record young students from the Chinese language school here in Ames. I'm asking you to introduce our listeners to the school and the students that they'll be hearing from. But first, here's a brief musical introduction, an appropriate fanfare called Jubilation, to welcome in the Chinese New Year.
Thank you. Okay, we just heard this very celebratory piece of music for the new year. And I want to thank KHOI and Kay for the interview with some local children in Ames to celebrate Chinese New Year. And actually, these children, I just reached to the families to ask if they would be interested in sending their children here for interview. And these children happen to be, all of them are attending Chinese language school in Ames. There are different children interviewed. They're from Chinese American families, Chinese Jewish, and Chinese Swiss.
And your American son was one of them, right, Seth?
Yes, he didn't talk much, though.
No. Well, the big kids were giving the little kids a chance to talk. They were very polite that way.
There's also very special, we have an African-American little girl, Willow, and who actually is very fluent in Chinese, in writing and speaking. She started learning Chinese language since she was in kindergarten.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's hear the kids now. Now, today we have in the studio, we've got seven people from the Chinese language school in Ames, and they've come to talk about this Chinese New Year. And they come from different regions of China, and I understand that from the different regions, they celebrate it in different ways with maybe different foods. So let's start over here with Olivia. How old are you, Olivia?
Seven.
Okay. So you're in first grade, and how does your family celebrate New Year? What do you eat?
Dumplings.
And does anyone know what dumplings symbolize? Do they symbolize something special, yes?
Well, dumplings on the outside, they look really simple, but on the inside, they're like really complex because they're made of a bunch of different things. So the Chinese people want people to be like dumplings, so you seem really simple, but on the inside, you're really complex.
Oh, wow. Well, that's a lot of philosophy to go with a dumpling. And what is your name, please?
Jacob.
Okay, and do you know what your sign of the zodiac is?
The monkey.
And what does that mean?
Cleverness.
Yeah, well, that fits, I suppose. And Olivia, what is your sign?
Ox.
And do you know what that means?
Strong and hardworking.
Sure. Okay. Now, what else do other people eat in their families aside from dumplings? Tell us your name first.
My name is David.
David? Where do your parents come from?
A city called Shijiazhuang.
Whereabouts is that? Is that in the north or the south?
Yeah, it's in a province called Hebei.
Uh-huh. And do you eat dumplings or do you eat something different?
I eat dumplings.
Uh-huh. Anyone eat something different from dumplings?
Well, my family usually eats soup along with dumplings and fish, too.
Okay. And where do they come from originally?
Middle China, in the central part of China.
So dumplings aren't as common there at New Year. You eat dumplings, too?
Yes.
Okay. Now, how about special clothes or special decorations for the house at New Year? Would anyone like to talk about that? Okay. This is Jacob again.
Well, on the New Year, we like to wear red.
Yes.
And what does that symbolize?
Well, it symbolized celebrating, and also there was this monster called Nian, which it was afraid of red.
I see. So it keeps monsters away.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And how about special decorations for the house and so on? Who is this speaking?
I'm Amy.
Amy, okay.
There are usually words written or cut out of red paper, and if it's cut out, then it's very intricate. We put those around the house to give us good luck.
Oh, this is this special Chinese paper cutting in special intricate patterns when you cut out Chinese letters?
Yes.
Did you want to say something, Jacob?
Well, sometimes they put the Chinese character Fu on there, which is, I think, wealth.
Richness.
Wealth,
and,
yeah.
They put it upside down because in Chinese, Dao would be upside down. But Dao also means here and now. So it would mean if you put Fu or wealth upside down, in Chinese it means wealth is here.
Okay. Let's move on round the table a bit. This is Seth, is it? Okay. Where do your parents come from, Seth?
I don't know exactly where my mom comes from, but she comes from around the southern part of China.
Mm-hmm. And what do you eat at New Year?
Usually it's just fish, some sort of vegetables and rice.
So this is more or less what you might eat at any other time. It's not a special New Year meal or anything.
Well, for dessert, we eat some sort of rice balls and hot water.
Uh-huh. So the rice balls are sort of special, are they?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you get together, presumably, with friends and family, do you? Is it a family celebration or is it just like a celebration with any of your friends, or how does that work?
I would say it's a family celebration.
This is David, is it?
Yes.
Uh-huh. So do you get together with, like, your aunts and uncles, too, and visit like that?
No, because they live in China, so we can't reach.
So, but if they were here, you would, probably, yeah.
And we FaceTime with them.
Mm-hmm.
In China, the entire family is expected to gather together to celebrate Chinese New Year together.
Mm-hmm. And aside from the feasting and decorating the house, what else do you do at Chinese New Year?
We light off firecrackers also to keep the monster Nian away. And we also give out Yasui Qian, which is money to keep you younger.
Yeah, it's like lucky money.
Lucky money. And do they just give you this money, or is it put in a special, is it wrapped? Yeah. Willow wanted to say something.
It's like in this thing called this Hongbao, and sometimes like you get it with... Sometimes, like, you get it after you eat or something.
So, I read something about red envelopes. Is that...
Yeah.
So, you get the money in special red envelopes. Olivia wanted to say something.
They sometimes put it under your pillow.
Oh, that's... You wake up and you see it in the morning. Uh-huh. So, if you wake up in the middle of the night and you look. Yes, David?
Well, apparently, we can't set off fireworks because it's illegal.
Oh, yes. Angelica? Is it? Have I got your name right?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
What are you doing special in your family at New Year?
Well, we just like to make dumplings.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes we get our red envelopes in unexpected places.
Oh, so you have to look for them?
Yeah.
They're hidden about the house like Easter eggs, the way we do Easter eggs, I expect. Now, Willow, I understand that you're not of Chinese ancestry. It's just that you study Chinese. Is that right?
Yes, it's kindergarten.
Uh-huh. And your teacher told me that you speak very good Chinese.
Yes.
Uh-huh. So have you got your family to do anything special for Chinese New Year, or just basically take no notice of it?
It's kind of like we do the same thing. Like sometimes we eat dumplings, and sometimes like we would... Sometimes people would, like, open their door, and then they would, like, sweep out, and then that would, like, bring in the new year or something.
Oh, so they sort of clean their house for the new year.
Yeah.
Sweep out the bad luck. And
make sense.
Uh-huh. This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. With the help of our guests, Cindy and Zheng Durbin, we're getting a view of the Chinese New Year, also known as the Spring Festival, from the point of view of children from the Chinese language school in Ames. In the next recording, we'll hear more from these young people. You can hear Olivia and David in this next recording when they sing a song wishing us a Happy New Year. I think most of our listeners will recognize the tune, which is not Chinese. Now, I asked some of you what your sign of the zodiac was. Someone I didn't ask who wants to tell me about their sign. Willow, do you know what your sign is?
Yeah, it's the pig, and I have no idea what it, like, represents.
I think someone told me the pig represents riches, I think.
Yeah, and like, wealthiness.
So it means you're going to be rich one day if you were born in the year of the pig.
Likely.
Maybe. Okay. Now, someone was telling me, it was you, I think, Jacob, that you don't get money in your family.
Yeah.
So they just ignored that. Your family just ignored that tradition, did they?
Yes.
Did they explain why?
Money should be earned, not given.
And did that bother you when you were growing up, that the other kids were getting money and you weren't?
No, because I didn't know other kids were getting money.
Ah, okay. Yes,
and,
Willa?
Like, actually, sometimes when people, like it's maybe not money, but it's like this coin wrapped in chocolate or something, and it looks like.
Oh, yeah.
Money.
Like, yeah.
Oh, like chocolate money.
Yeah.
Yeah, wrapped in gold paper or something. Yeah. That's very nice. They're good to eat, too. Uh-huh. Yeah, we have those at Christmas, too. Seth, have you got anything to add? What grade are you in, Seth?
In eighth grade.
Okay, so you're a good bit older than a lot of people here. Do you still enjoy Chinese New Year?
Yes.
Do you think it's mostly a festival for kids or... Do you think the grown-ups enjoy it just as much?
Yeah.
Grown-ups enjoy it a lot, like pyromaniacs, like setting off fireworks.
Which they can't do in Ames, Iowa.
Yeah. They aren't allowed to set off fireworks anytime.
Well, we usually don't set... In America, we usually only set off firecrackers, which I think are legal, not fireworks.
Uh-huh. Okay.
That I know of.
Uh-huh. Okay.
These fireworks include sparks, which I guess might burn.
Does anyone have anything special that they do in their family for New Year?
No.
Well, I learned how to, paint Chinese traditional art in a traditional style. And sometimes I write words on red paper to hang around my house, and it's supposed to bring good luck.
So you help with the decorations with your artwork?
Yes.
Uh-huh. And these are special paintings that bring luck. Yes, Willa?
And, sometimes, instead of, using regular, pencils and stuff, you could use this thing called, Maobi, and it's, this thing that most people use to, write Chinese words and just hang around their house for good luck.
Yes, that's what I use to paint and write.
It's kind of like this furry paintbrush.
Uh-huh.
That you just...
So like calligraphy, special calligraphy?
Yes. Yeah.
That you just have to get wet and not even dip it in paint and it's already...
I know. Yeah, I know
sometimes
that.
Sometimes that's the brushes that are already filled with ink, but the brushes that I use, I have to mix colors and everything.
So there's more room for creativity there because you can mix your own colors.
Yes.
It sounds as if you enjoy that a lot, do you?
Yes, I do.
Most of you guys are pretty young. Do you think you'll continue the tradition of celebrating Chinese New Year when you get older?
Yes.
Okay. You're all nodding. Okay, good. Anything I forgot? Anything else anyone wants to add about Chinese New Year?
I know of a legend how people started celebrating Chinese New Year, and it's probably not historically accurate. There was this monster called the Nian, and every year... It would take a bite out of a creature, and it was different every year. And finally, the only thing that he hadn't taken a bite out of was people. So the people got very scared, and they devised a plan to scare away the monster. They would set off firecrackers because they knew that the Nian hated loud noise, and they would dress in red.
Because to scare the monster.
Yes, uh-huh. Because they knew that he hated the color red. And... The monster got so scared that he ran away forever and he never bothered people again. And that's the legend of how people started celebrating Chinese New Year.
So I'm Jacob. And so now people keep on setting off firecrackers and wear red in case he ever comes back.
Okay, to scare off the monster and, getting rid of all the old bad things from the old year and celebrating the new year. Oh, yes, David.
I got a poem to read.
Okay.
But it's in Chinese. 新年到，新年到， 穿新衣，戴新帽， 家家过年见热闹， 贴对联和新年， 包饺子，请团圆， 我给大家拜个年， 新年快乐要平安。
Would someone like to translate that for us and tell us what it means? This is Amy. It's going to translate it for us.
It means the new year is here and People are wearing new clothes and new hats and things. And the celebrations in every house are pretty festive. And people are, like, making dumplings and doing a lot of activities for the new year. And the person who's saying this is wishing everyone a happy new year and hoping that the new year brings them joy and peace.
Okay, thank you. So that just about describes the whole festival. How about we all say Happy New Year in Chinese to end with? Ready?
新年快乐!
Thank you very much. These are some young people from the Chinese language school here in Ames, Iowa. And they're not all from China either. One of them is an African-American, and that's Willow, who's, her teacher told me, is a very good speaker and reader and understander of Chinese. Thank you all very much, and Happy New Year to you.
Bye-bye.
You just heard about Amy Zhang's painting, and now here we'll just hear a little bit of Amy playing the piano. It's a song, a piano solo, based on a song, a traditional song, Singing for My Motherland. Chinese New Year celebrations in this country. And now, Sinian, I believe you're going to tell us about the impact of this festival in China itself.
Yeah, just a little bit of background of Chinese New Year. After I heard all these Chinese mythology from the children, by the Chinese recorded history, the upcoming New Year is the 4,715th year. By the Chinese zodiac, it is the year of rooster. The Chinese New Year is also called a spring festival. It starts January 28th this year, that's tomorrow. And right now, it's about 3 hours from now in the Orient. The festival lasts for 15 days. As right now, at the moment, on the other side of the earth in China, it is during the hour of 9 o'clock in the evening. And most families probably are still having their New Year Eve dinner. That is the most important and most cherished annual dinner for each family, for every family.
So it's like our Christmas almost. I mean, it's a really big celebration.
Right. And it is a long-held tradition for Chinese people to reunite with their families for the New Year, going home for the New Year, particularly to be at the New Year Eve dinner with loved ones is of the utmost importance to the Chinese race. Throughout the Chinese history, there were poems, novels, stories, and in the modern days, movies and plays expressing this intense yearning and emotions to travel from afar to be home for the New Year. Metaphorically, going home for the New Year in Chinese culture is like an invisible magnet sucking hundreds or millions of people across the land to a same destination, home. Now, this rushing home around China during the Spring Festival creates the largest annual human migration on the planet.
Wow.
Let's look at some statistics. The Spring Festival travel season, or the Chun Yun in Chinese language, usually begins 15 days before the New Year Day and lasts around 40 days. The number of passenger journey, that person trip, during the Chun Yun period was 2.9 billion in the year 2016. And the latest official prediction for this year is 3.43 billion per person trips. In terms of the number of travelers during the season, last year it was 325 million. That is 24% of the Chinese population of that year. And that is slightly over 100% of the U.S. population.
Wow.
Just imagine every single person living in this country traveling in the same time during a period of 40 days. The predicted New Year travelers this year is 356 million, and that is nearly 110% of the current U.S. population. So among the colossal Chun Yun crowd, most of them are migrant workers, college students, and some vacation takers. Since the Chinese economy reforms of the late 1970s, new economy opportunities have emerged, most at a considerable distance from the Chinese inland regions. Consequently, there has been a massive migration from rural to urban areas over the course of the last few decades. This is reminiscent of other industrial revolutions around the world.
Mm-hmm.
During the Chun Yun period, most of these laborers return to their rural hometown to be with their families. The migration workers consist of about 75% of the total number of travelers, and the rest covers the college students and vacationers. To meet this tremendous challenge of mobilizing hundreds of millions of people with time constraints, the Chinese government, businesses, police force, National Guards, and fellow citizens, ordinary people, are united to carry out a gigantic project named by some people, Let My People Go. Railway transport experienced the greatest challenge during the Chun Yun period. High-speed train services are increased, and other measures are taken to facilitate the traffic flow. Sinopec, China's largest oil company, offers free gas refill for travelers to six provinces, which are the localities with the largest number of migrant workers. In the past years, the Orange Bus Project has reached 18 cities in China during this heavy traffic period. The other day, I heard that insurance company commissioned 200 long-distance coaches to aid the going-home migrants. Also, a huge number of migrant workers travel on their motorcycles. Along the motor road from town to town, volunteers set up tents to offer free raincoats, dry clothes, towels, water, food, and other necessities, and to let the travelers rest in order to finish their long journey home. The other day, I saw a news article which showed a guard in Beijing on duty standing still while an elderly couple standing nearby staring at the young man, their son. What happened was that the young man cannot go home for the new year as he has to work overtime to keep the travel flow in order. So his parents traveled afar to the city to be with their son while he was working. So currently, the largest crowd of people on Earth are moving. Everyone in China wants to be home, and everyone wants everyone else to be home as well. So this Let My People Go is indeed a beautiful story of solidarity and brotherhood, and just like what is described in the song that Amy Zhang played earlier.
Song of My Motherland, yeah. Yeah, well, this certainly makes our Christmas rush and travel look like something very minor indeed. Thank you very much, Sinian, for that. Now, to end with, let's just have a little musical break as we move into the next part of the show called Beautiful Flowers and the Full Moon.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Ursula Rudenberg here with Kay Puttock, your host for today. And the Ann Kinzel and Victoria Shopinski are here with us with the monthly update from the Ames Progressive Alliance. Thanks for coming in.
Oh, thanks for having us. The month went by quickly once again.
Well, good morning, everybody. It's Friday, and it's Ames Progressive Alliance time on KHOI. And as always, we want to thank you for having us on each month. It's a great time to update the community on what we're doing. So today, Victoria Shopinski and I are going to keep it simple, but we have a lot of ground to cover because the Alliance has been on fire.
Yeah.
And we want to share that excitement with you. But before we get to that, we want to share a brief update on the Ames Community Solar Initiative. We hope that our APA solar experts, Bob Haug and Betty Baird, join us next month for a more in-depth look at this popular topic, but we'll try to do their work justice today. Victoria, what can you tell us about the Ames Community Solar Initiative for those listeners who may not yet have heard about it?
Well, I think the important thing to remember is that it is under the sustainability goal for the city that we are going to implement the community solar project, and the objective states that staff is now interviewing consulting firms to assist in the development of an RFP by May of 2017. So the hope is that by August, a private sector developer, because we had several choices, and that was what we decided to do and follow what had been successful in Cedar Falls to bring in an outside developer. So hopefully in the fall, we will be building. And there is a location that is probably rising to the top of consideration. And if you know West Ames, if you're at the corner of Shoal Road and Ontario, and you go down to the lab and then you go down some more, there's a big swath of land down there. And up on the other side is where Moore Park is. So there's several acres down there that are owned by the city, and that is the location that is probably going to be where we will have an Ames Community Solar Project.
Wow. Well, that's a big jump from the last time we talked. A potential location, getting on the city's goal list. That's impressive.
Yes, and I think the Ames Progressive Alliance, in working with the city, that we all can be very proud that we've been able to move it along, and that it's now
a reality.
Mm-hmm. We're getting close.
Yeah.
So the APA has had a busy several months, both in the fall and beginning this winter. On November 29th, the Alliance sponsored Inclusive Ames, A Time to Act, which was held at the Ames Public Library. Can you tell us a little bit about what the event was about?
We knew, or in November, as many people did across the nation, that there were many individuals, groups, looking for ways to become involved with their communities and to take action. That maybe if we couldn't do something at a national level, we could affect change, make our communities better. So we pulled together an event on November 29th, Inclusive Ames. We partnered with the Ames Public Library and the Ames Human Relations Commission to ask people to think about how to move forward. We also enlisted several organizations from the community and statewide. For example, the ACLU, Planned Parenthood, One Iowa, local organizations like the Emergency Residence Project, Youth and Shelter Services, and the list goes on. And we asked those groups to help us formulate questions, to think about what their members were looking at as potential threats or concerns. And from all those responses or questions, we put together three questions and then asked the over 300 participants who came to the library to meet in small groups, to sit with people that you don't know. And there were a lot of new people in the library that evening that many of us were commenting that we hadn't had the opportunity to meet before. And so small groups talked about actions. Then we compiled long lists of actions on three questions.
I was there, and there was an amazing amount of people. In fact, I think it was an overflow crowd. You had to go next door.
Yeah, we had a nice little opportunity that maybe others will use in the future, that we took 80 people and walked across the street to the Elks Club, and it worked out perfectly.
Hey, thanks, Alex. That's that's really good. We also had childcare, and so we got a big range of ages and interests. The room was just bubbling when I walked by, and I assume the same thing at the Elks.
Yeah, and it's something, just the child care supervised activities is something that we've tried to do with any of our events because we believe that it opens up an opportunity for people who wouldn't normally be able to participate.
Well, it is inclusive aims, so
right, there you go.
We live it. Okay. So I understand the first question was, how do we address threats and advocate for the unique needs of refugees, LGBTQ individuals, people of color, targeted faith, and immigrants? And you had an event surrounding that question.
Okay. Yes. So what we did is we had the three questions. We asked people to sign up for the question that they would like to pursue further. So we've had three different meetings, and those have all occurred within the last couple of weeks. Many of the actions pointed to wanting education. So people want to be involved. They want to do something, but they want to do it well. And so looking at question one, and it's always hard to narrow things down because we all want to do everything. So that's a challenge, is to let's pick things that are manageable, that we can have some wins on, and then maybe we'll move to some other actions. But that group on question one decided that first we needed to assess the needs, because that's always a concern, that we're making assumptions on what other people's needs are. So they're formulating a process to discover what specific needs are. And then they wanted also to look at training for bystanders, which was a new term for me, bystander training. But instead of, you know, it's how do you participate when you see someone else being targeted or threatened? And the third thing, another group was in that larger group was working on, was sanctuary cities and the desire to have AIMS sign on, like many other communities across the country, as a sanctuary city. And I think, from my own opinion, what we've been seeing is it's mostly large cities. But the more communities that participate, like anything, the stronger the message will be.
Well, radio always keeps us informed. This morning I was listening to a piece on NPR about sanctuary cities. And what was interesting to me as a former attorney was that there is no legal definition of what a sanctuary city is. Okay. So when the federal government says, well, we're going to come after sanctuary cities, nobody knows what they really are. They're sort of a self-declared thing. Iowa City has leaned in that direction. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens with that. I'm curious about how many people came to that meeting, that follow-up meeting, in response to this community question.
So question one, we had about 40 people.
Okay.
Question two was a bit smaller. I think we were at 28. And then question three, we had 34 maybe.
Okay. I see that the second question was really about how can AIMS as a community empower and equip families and all young residents to help combat discrimination in all its form, with the notion that maybe some of this anti-immigrant or discriminatory rhetoric has ramped up since our last election. How did the community respond at that event? What kind of things bubbled out of that?
Primarily, that group looked at, backed off from saying we, because the APA was there to facilitate, and we wanted to make sure that we weren't directing what people should do, that the individuals who came needed to be the deciding factor. And they wanted to begin looking for ways to work with the school district through administration or whatever other avenue for more diversity training. But also we learned, for example, that there is a club at the high school, and I can't remember the name, maybe it's called Spectrum, but there are no similar, you know, for LGBT students. But it also encourages not just people who identify as LGBTQ, but are allies, and they're very strong on encouraging all people to participate in these clubs. But where I was going with that is that something similar doesn't exist at the middle school, but there's a need for it. So that was going to be a starting point, because that is probably more doable in a short period of time.
Well, it's always interesting as a person who moved to Iowa from California to hear this talk about how diverse things are in Iowa. Yeah. Because when you come here from California, diversity is not what hits you on the head. And so it's really exciting to hear that people are acknowledging that even in a place thought of as perhaps so white bread as Iowa, that there is true diversity and it needs to be addressed at the community level. Yes. So that's exciting. But you also had a third question, I think, that talked to, shall we say, more the exercise of power or political power. And that question focused on how to get more people engaged in local progressive leadership. I understand you had a little difficulties with rescheduling that one, the weather, Martin Luther King, all kinds of stuff going on. But how did that event go?
As the others, there was a great desire for, or there is a great desire for, education. And so where we left off, and we still have a lot more talking to do, is to perhaps put together a series of workshops. Those of us who have worked on campaigns or run for office, we forget that it's not a process that is familiar to all. And so I think we'll do some training or conversations on how people actually can participate in the process of campaigns. And the nice thing about campaigns is that you can devote an hour making some phone calls, or you can devote a lot of time. And I think that fits people's schedules and ability to want to be involved, because they know that it has that sort of flexibility. And we're encouraging people to start thinking about running for office. We have city council elections that will be coming up in November of 2017 and school board elections in September. But yes, that's the so we're going to do some and also issues. And I think that's it's difficult for people to know where to look to get information on issues. And that really came out in that conversation. And you know, we don't have a lot of, we have this entity, thank you so much, to talk about what's going on locally. But I think we were learning that there's a disconnect. And so that might be another opportunity for things to focus on in a workshop discussion series.
Sure. When I ran for office, I definitely thought I'd entered another alternate reality of the world. But it was fun, and I was amazed at how much people wanted to be involved and helpful. So it seems like following the national election, there is much talk in the progressive community about the need to reengage at the local level. I feel pretty proud that here in Ames, we beat that timing for about a year with the APA, and we are definitely at the forefront of that kind of movement to return to local politics. So that's pretty exciting. So that's a good wrap-up of where we are with the APA. What's going to happen in the next few months? Are more conversations coming out of these questions?
Yes. So we looked for leaders in all of these groups. They'll be getting together in the next few weeks to sort of decide where we go next. And then the other thing that the APA is hoping to reignite is our Progressive Pints night at Torrent, primarily is where we've had them in the past, for a more social, we'll have a topic, but the idea is to be a little more social and to have an opportunity. Because I think, and I said this before on this show, is that it's about meeting people. You know, we don't have to spend a lot of time together, but recognizing each other and having the ability to know more faces in our community.
So that's Progressive Pints at the Torrent Brewing Company here in downtown.
We don't
Ames.
Have a date yet, but
stay
February
tuned.
We'll probably start.
Stay tuned to our Facebook page. We're very good about posting lots of events and things that we do at the APA. We also have a website these days.
We have a website, and there's a new page that's being connected to it called Inclusive Ames, which will speak specifically to that, you know, what's going on with the outcomes from that original November event. And then we always keep our Facebook page updated, Ames Progressive Alliance.
Well, Victoria, that was a great summary of what the Progressive Alliance is doing locally. Maybe let's shift our talk a little bit to an event that captured a lot of attention in the progressive community and otherwise last Saturday in Des Moines, the Women's March, Iowa. Now, I attended. I didn't see you, but there were 26.
We saw each other on Facebook, though.
Yeah, we did, but there were 26,000 people there, so you're unique, but it was a little tough to spot you. So tell me a little bit about what you saw at the march.
I mean, numbers was what it was all about for me. And that's why I went, because I think the more people who come and the more often we do these sorts of things, one can only hope that it has some impact. I was pretty depressed on Friday, and so seeing smiling faces all day Saturday made a huge difference for me, and spoke to a lot of other people, so that was the general consensus. And looking on the New York Times website on Saturday night and seeing the same signs being held up in Nairobi that I had seen held up in Des Moines, Iowa, and also on the bow of a boat where a number of people were standing with signs in Antarctica and in the Auckland's. I mean, it's just, does it say something?
I hope so.
But you were there. What was your impression?
Well, I had kind of an interesting experience because I got to attend the march with an 87-year-old Iowan from Knoxville, Twyla Rankin, mother of Mary Rankin, who is the sustainability director at Iowa State. And it's easy to say that Twyla is a pistol. And she had a couple problems with the march. First, people weren't moving quickly enough. And second, she kept saying, I've done this too many times. Yeah. I've been marching over the same topics for the last 50 years. So I've been kind of reflecting on what that says about our progressive values and our country. If an 87-year-old is lecturing a 60-year-old that things have not been moving quickly enough and she's tired of the rerun. So that seems kind of like something that we all need to think about. The question I had at the march, and I found it, like you, very inspiring to see all the people out. I had been told that they'd anticipated about 10,000 people and clearly almost tripled that. And it was very exciting to be part of that. But I kept finding myself wondering, is this going to go the way of the Tea Party, which seemed to have legs and influence our national political body, or is it going to go the way of Occupy Wall Street, which seemed to fizzle out? And I think that's a huge question that all of us with progressive values need to reflect on. How are we going to capture that energy, mm-hmm, that our country needs to move forward?
And I think what we're doing with the Ames Progressive Alliance is a small part of that. In fact, I've been wanting to share with national programs what we've been doing here, because I hear the talk about how we need to impact national elections, and I'd like the conversation to be turning to what we can do locally. And here's one example of a way that you might make some difference in your own in your community.
Well, yeah, it's interesting. You mentioned that you saw people all over the world coming together under this banner. I had the opportunity to live in France, where I got to see people hit the streets all the time. Hmm. They're not shy about they're practically professional protesters, I think, sometimes in France. But people there are heterogeneous, like in the United States, but they tend in their protests to come together under one banner, the banner of solidarity. What keeps us in what's common to all of us? Is it oppression, economic inequality? And they really focus on the commonalities between people. In the United States, that's not necessarily the way we go. And I wonder if that's what sometimes keeps us from sustaining these kind of protest movements. What do you think about that?
But I'm looking at time. But we'll entertain that question again later,
sure,
if that's all right with you.
You bet.
Okay, because I do want to mention an upcoming event that the Ames Progressive Alliance is, again, partnering with the library and with the Human Relations Commission. And it is tied into the, and please help me with the pronunciation, Ta-Nehisi Coates, who will be speaking through the ISU Lecturers Program on Monday. But we are all participating in a pre-event tomorrow, Saturday, the 28th, at the library, and it's called Talk Race. A young adult author named Kekla Magoon, who has written a book.
I think that the event's starting at 10:30.
Yes.
And
yes.
Then Ms. Magoon, who's the author of How It Went Down, The Rock and the River, and X, a novel, which I understand hits with the teen set. is going to speak about race issues at 1:30, and we'll also have a book signing and books available for purchase.
Right. So it'll start at 10:30 with a panel discussion of the Coates book, which is Between the World and Me. And then at noon, it will be GID. There'll be a keynote challenge and a luncheon. And there'll be an opportunity at 1:30 for teens to participate in a conversation about the Kekla Magoon book. And she's coming in from Vermont. And the Friends Foundation is supporting that and also supported the purchase of a number of books to distribute in the middle school and the high school, which I think is fabulous because we're making sure that we're including teens in this conversation.
Yeah, in fact, at 3 p.m., Ms. Magoon will be there with a Run DSM co-founder to talk to teens about race with free pizza. And this event is limited to teens only. So those of you who aren't teens aren't getting any free pizza.
I want to listen through the door, though.
Okay. No pizza.
Right. We are running close to our time here, yes?
Yeah.
Okay. So, well, I'm going to just say thank you so much for letting us be here.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for coming by.
We
heard from Ann Kinzel and Victoria Shapinski from the Ames Progressive Alliance. Just a reminder, APA stands for Ames Progressive Alliance. And real quick, just tell us the mission of the Ames Progressive Alliance.
It's to leverage local resources to make our community better.
Okay. And in the first half of the show, we heard from mapmaker Nitin Gadia and Cindy and Jang Durbin, and the children from the Chinese Language School. If you enjoyed this show, please tell your friends and check us out on Facebook. This show was engineered by Vincent Valurano, and you can also hear this show again on our website, khoifm.org. KHOI is streaming live at khoifm.org, and now stay tuned for Morning Masterpieces. And please remember that you, as the listener, are the most important part of local talk. Your participation as audience and your generous donations make it all possible. Thank you for listening. We'll see you again on the radio, and Happy New Year.
KHOI is funded in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. Find job opportunities throughout Ames and Story County at workinames.com. Again, that's workinames.com.